Everyone, for those who don't know me, my name is Peter Turner, now at the University of Tokyo. Today, first of all, thanks for the invite. I'm going to talk today about something that I've just started learning. So it's going to be fairly simple, I think. And in I think it's appropriate for a workshop. It's basically a problem that Robin suggested to me about 6 months ago when I had only heard of these things. And we did some work on it for about a week, and then it's been sitting around for 4 months. So I'm going to show you what we did in a week, this idea, and then maybe someone can yell out, you know, why it's wrong or what we missed and help us along. So it's a workshop type talk in the sense that I'm expecting you to work. continuous variable two design. So there are much better experts on I think all of the words in the title in this room than me. So maybe I can get helped along. But to motivate the idea, so Robin motivated it when he brought it up with me, was that the original quantum tomography, optical state tomography, was continuous variable. This paper, 1993, and it was kind of, I don't know what the right terminology is. I'll say like raster phase space in some sense with these lines that are given by some theta. Through phase space, and then use basically this radon transform, which is a technique from, I think, classical medical tomography, to reconstruct a Wigner function, and then from there you have a density matrix, which of course is very nice, but there are a few drawbacks. You can look at these things, these lines through phase space, as kind of loosely, I guess, MUBs, in the sense that you're looking for some sort of complete set of mutually unbiased bases, or at least complete bases. Well, in continuous space, it's not even mutually unbiased. Isn't even properly defined. There's this
divider.
Yeah. So there's this paper here that's fairly recent. I shoot left, by the way. this fairly recent paper where they talk about continuous variable MUV. And the conclusions are that the definitions don't go straight through from finite dimension MUV stuff. I'll leave it at that for now.
So there's no such thing as MUV, so we can call anything we like.
Yeah, we can kind of like the idea, you can look at them that way, roughly. It's certainly not rigorous. But it's also a physical, they're also a little bit unpleasant from a physical perspective, because these lines are infinitely extended through phase space and may not be fun in the lab. So we've already talked about this, roughly these theta, these lines through phase space, looking for sets of MUVs. So Rob Adamson's going to talk about MUVs either today or later this, or tomorrow, I guess. Tomorrow. So very short, extremely short. refresher, recall mutually unbiased bases in finite dimensions. So two sets of bases. Psi and phi in some d-dimensional Hilbert space have this constant overlap. Any states drawn from one of each of the bases have this overlap that's independent of J and K. There's a maximum of d plus one such bases in d-dimensional Hilbert space, and they're informationally complete. There's d times d plus 1 measurements. So because density matrices of d squared elements in them, these things are a little bit more than complete. They're not minimal in some sense. And they're conjectured, of course, to only exist in Hilbert spaces whose dimension are a power of a prime. So they have some drawbacks, is all I'm trying to say. I'm trying to motivate this moving along here. So the other drawback that I listed there was that these eigenstates are unphysical, right? Not normalizable. The eigenstates of position and momentum aren't normalizable, so they're not even really physical states. Process tomography, for instance, for a continuous variable system using these kinds of states may be difficult, and Alex is going to speak right after me. If anyone can do it, I'm sure Alex can, so maybe he's done it. But I can imagine doing process tomography on continuous variable systems with unphysical states might lead to problems. So when Robin and I were talking about this was the motivation. Gaussian states are more physical in the sense that these are the things that live in the lab that we're used to. And here's my picture. It's kind of like a de-squeezing of that orange picture there. Have these things become finitely squeezed, or not squeezed at all. Clearly, some informationally complete sets exist, but are there sets of Gaussian states for continuous variables that generalize the finite dimensional notions that seem to be so interesting, like sick PLVN and T designs? So that was the question, and that was my attempt to motivate it somewhat. So a refresher: sick PLVNs in finite dimensions. A set of normalized states, take their projectors, d squared of them. They sum to the identity. And again, the overlaps between any two of them, that where I doesn't equal j, is independent of I and j. So these equiangular lines is another name for these things. Talked about in Zauner's thesis in 1999, and then really fleshed out in this paper of Rene's and Robin and Andrew Scott, Carl Caves in 2004. So to me, these things are conspicuous. This is the first thing that I was in Calgary before I was in Tokyo, and Andrew Scott was there, and he gave a talk on these things. And what was conspicuous to me at first was that there's a conjecture that these sick PLVNs can be constructed by running a group representation over fiducial states. So we call them group covariant, however you like. Take the finite Heisenberg-Weyl, or generalized Pauli group, these X's and Z's, I didn't define them, but it's a generalized Pauli group for d-dimensional finite space. And some fiducial vector phi. So run all of these, run all the elements of this finite group on this fiducial vector phi. Take the set of those things, and it's conjectured that these, for certain fiducial states phi, these things will generate sick POVM, and it's proved in certain dimensions. Conjectured for all. It's nice. It's conspicuous because it's like a finite generalized coherent state, right? So the kind of continuous variable limit of this thing is the Heisenberg-Weyl group, the Lie group, the continuous version of the Heisenberg-Weyl group, which I call HW1 there. And Gaussian states are, you know, the classic standard coherent states are Gaussian, and they are exactly the coherent states with respect to this continuous group, which I've just written as a set of d alpha acting on the fiducial state is the vacuum. D alpha is a representation of this HW Heisenberg-Weyl, the continuous Heisenberg-Weyl group. So that's why it's kind of conspicuous, it kind of leads one to believe that maybe the standard coherent states are a continuous analog of these of the sick PLVM states in finite dimensions. The symmetric part is tricky in continuous variables. We mentioned earlier the MUVs. It's not quite clear how to take the symmetric part of the definition of that they use in the finite dimensions to the continuous case. So kind of relax it and go to from sick PLVMs to these T designs. And Andrew spoke about these yesterday very briefly again. T design is a set of, in the finite case, it's a finite set of states, phi j, I've called them here, where the T-fold tensor product, the sum over T-fold tensor products of these guys, projectors onto these guys, is equal to the Haar measure distributed T-fold tensor product, the integral over the Haar measure of a T-fold tensor product of all the states in the Hilbert space. They'll also define as the set of states, another way to say it, I guess, is the set of states, a finite set of states that approximates, or gives exactly the same results on a polynomial of degree t in the vector space. So this is shown in that paper that I referenced before, that for t equals one, a one design, sorry, is the same as a PLVM. Sums up the identity. For t equals two, a sick PLVM is always a two design. And if there's d squared elements in this thing, this here we didn't say how many elements a t design has to have. But if there's d squared of them, then you can show that any two design with d squared elements is a sick PLVM. And so from that definition star, we see that when we do this integral over all, you know, Haar distributed states in the Hilbert space, you see that the one design condition just means that they sum up to one. That's the PLVM condition. And the two design case means, you know, if I do this integral over Haar distributed all the states Haar distributed in Hilbert space, I get the identity on the symmetric subspace. Okay. So that's the condition that we're going to use when we go after these Gaussian guys. So Gaussian one design, well, sure, we all know that this integral over standard coherent states is a resolution of the identity. But I'm going to go through it in detail because for the two design, for the t equals two, the two design case, it's not as clear. So I want to do it explicitly, and here's how I'm parameterizing things. I'm going to say this is my Gaussian x bar, p bar, u and v. I apologize if it's not your favorite parameterization. Because the wave functions, I'll call phi of x. U has to be greater than 0. And the wave function there is this Gaussian here with the mean x, the mean of x, the mean of p, u and v. So I think the standard squeezing parameter would be u is 1 over s squared, I think. And then to be completely general, you could have this real parameter v, which can take any real value. So these are general Gaussians. And this is the schematic I have. This is kind of what, when Robin and I first drew it down, this is the picture that we had. Although, as I'm going to get to, I think it's a little misleading. The problem we're going to get to is what measure to use for u and v. And that's essentially what our problem is. So this picture makes it look like they should just be flat, distributed Lebesgue measure. But we'll see soon that that's leads us to trouble. Anyway, there are the variances in terms of these u's and v's. And the standard coherent state, the standard coherent state is a Gaussian with u equals 1 and v equals 0. So the last line means there. So those are the, these are the Gaussians I'm going to be using.
E-bar.
Yeah, sorry, I thought instead of introducing, well, I should have called it probably D, the
displacement operator in terms of X bar and P bar. I left it in terms of alpha, because that's the standard way.
Sorry, I'm missing the information. Probably already said that the V represents what? The U represents your sort of width along the x-axis. And the V is a ratio or something? Or?
Well, I've drawn it this way. It's kind of like the semi-major axis of the ellipse of your Gaussian in phase space. Obviously, there's two numbers that are going to parameterize that thing, and two real numbers, one of which is positive, because if I let U be negative, I just get the same. You know, I just doubly count.
It just doesn't seem to be, if you're saying V equals zero, I guess I'm missing how that parameter goes to zero for a regular coherent state.
Together they say the angle thing?
Yeah, I think a more standard, I couldn't find a more standard parameterization. Like I say, I don't use these things all the time. But I mean, S, if U is 1 over S squared, then you get, I think, your X minus X bar squared over 2S squared, which I think is a more standard squeezing parameter. And then V would correspond, like Dan says, to an angle of which direction you squeeze.
If I remember correctly, one way to think about this is to build this state. You start with a coherent state, translate it by X bar, P bar, squeeze it by U, and then skew it by V.
Yeah, by V. Yeah. Or rotate it.
No, not rotate, skew.
Okay.
And the goal was to come up with a parameterization that kind of represents the underlying group structure. And you can generate the whole linear group through squeezing, skewing, and translation.
Right.
So I'll mention this. I'll mention this after we go through the little calculations. But yeah, I mean, looking at it, when you look at it that way, that's how looking at it in terms of generalized coherent states. That'd be exactly right. D comes along, and Heisenberg-Weil translates you, and then the symplectic group is somehow parameterized by U and V or S and theta, whatever parameterization you like, and gives you this shear squeezing. Okay, so an unsqueezed one design. I've already said we know that this has to work out. I just want to show it. So sandwich this integral between x and y. I get an integral over x bar and p bar, because remember, it's unsqueezed. U is 1 and v is 0. Just write it out. There's, you can see the e to the I p bar x minus y, and then this Gaussian. You do the x bar integral. Just recognizing this is a delta function set y equals to x. And this one's nicely normalized. Everything comes out exactly right, assuming that I haven't missed a factor of 2 pi or something in my delta function, e to the integral dp bar, e to the I p bar x minus y. That one comes out nice and clean. So there's the one design. This thing's acting like the identity, looking like the identity for continuous variables. And then I rushed ahead and did the next one, a squeeze one design. And when I originally did it, you can see the mistake I made in red at the end. But it's the same thing. Now, let instead of u equals 1 and v equals 0, let u and v be free and do the integral over all these. Okay, so now it's a wider class of Gaussian states. So now I'm going to do 4 integrals. Again, sandwiched between x and y looks pretty much the same, except I've got a v term coming up. But because I can do the x bar integral, these are Gaussians, I can do the x bar integral right away. You can see this thing pops out. Again, I've got my delta function in terms of the p bar integral. And because of this x minus y squared, I just said, oh, well, if x doesn't equal y, this whole thing's 0, so let x equal to y, and that exponential disappears. And then I'm left with an integral over u and v, but I'm going to say it's normalized and just forget it. And that's my mistake. U and v is non-compact. But, you know, I was like, oh, well, it worked for standard coherent states, so I've already got a one design. What I really want to go on to do is two designs. So, I mean, this is the first indication. Sorry. this So have you got me up to here?
Yeah.
Okay. So now I say x has to equal y, and this exponential disappears. I take my delta function out, and I'm left with this integral with no integrand. And I assume the first thing I did, literally, when this happens usually, I say, oh, you know, it's a Haar measure on some group or whatever. I can normalize that integral. So it's 1. So this integral, this red integral would be 1. And the fact is it's not. In the same way that the integral over dx bar dp bar, with no integrand, is not 1. But I was just fast.
Sorry, if you'll forgive me. So you're only off by a factor of infinity, though.
Yeah, oh, just, yeah. You know, just 1 infinity.
So you may have already said it, and I'm probably just horribly behind on notation. What do you mean by D? What do you mean by having U in brackets?
Exactly. Well, okay, so this is, I mean, I did know from the... I made more than one mistake. I did not know what the measure was exactly. But I had a good feeling that because from the picture that I drew, this is the thing I had in my head, that V would be flatly distributed from positive infinity to negative infinity. So I think that dV is the right measure there. I still think that. But U is a problem. In the same way that if I'd gone to parameters S and theta or something, then I would have seen, you know, I know S has a different, I've got to worry about that measure more. And sorry, I should have said this. Thank you for bringing it up. All that bracket means is I know there's something wrong with my U measure, but I'm not worried about it. And then I made the second mistake of like, oh, well, it's normalized and moved on. Yeah.
If I can just interject some background now here, there's very quickly, there's kind of two questions. First of all, is it possible to build a two design out of Gaussians? And then the second question is, if so, what measure do you need over this four-dimensional manifold, right, of that defines the Gaussian states?
Yeah.
And so for the coherent states to get a one design, you have to use the flat Lebesgue measure over translation. If you pick a different measure that's concentrated around the origin, you don't get a one design. So kind of hidden beneath this is a lot of wondering what the heck the right measure is, because that defines that state.
And so this was literally my, Robin and my first go at it. And I just wanted to tell this story. So moving on to two designs, I'm going to show that the unsqueezed ones won't work. And then I'll show how the squeezed ones become tantalizingly close to working. But to see that, we've got to say, recall for two designs that this thing is the projector on the symmetric states. Okay? So if I'm going to sandwich it between x, y, and z, w, then I need to come up not with just a delta function, but with the symmetrized version. Okay? So when I do, I'm looking for two designs, I've got to see something like this come up. In the same way, when I was looking for one design, I'm looking for d delta x minus y come out. But now I need to look for this to come up. Is that clear? Because it has the projector on the symmetric side. Okay, so I do the unsqueezed two design. So now I've got two standard coherent states. Two of them. Sorry, the tensor product of two of them. The outer product of the tensor product of two of them. And I can go through, I get it, it looks similar. There's the x bar integral. There's a p bar integral that looks like a delta function, but it's pretty clear. Yeah, I can do the x bar integral, but it's pretty clear that I'm not getting anything that looks like that. Okay? So as far as I can see, there's no way to do it. It's not a measure problem or anything like that. It's just that the standard coherent states will never get you a two design, I think, is at least what I took away when I did that calculation, and that's why I put it up there. There's no way I can fiddle around and make this look like that. But for squeezed two designs with these two extra parameters in them, off I go, do the same thing. Now I've got an extra line, right, with the V. And U is left in as a parameter, but I've got a whole extra factor. And the only thing to, look at here is that for U, I get a plus and a plus for the two, for the Z and the W, the stars, because it was U plus IV. And for the I, of course, I get two negative signs. Okay. Again, I get from the P bar integral, I just get one delta function. So that's the same as before. I've got U out in my normalization. But everything's looking pretty much the same, except for this extra factor. Now, when I use this delta function, I say x plus y has to equal z plus w. Do the x bar integral first, and I get another Gaussian. Okay. And that then it factors nicely up in the components, so things are looking good. And then I'm going to use this delta function condition, x plus y has to equal z plus w, and that simplifies things quite nicely. This one disappears, right, if x plus y is equal to z plus w. And then this one simplifies to something that factors like that. This guy goes to there. And then this is basically just a bunch of junk that simplifies a little bit. I've left it there. Okay, but the key point is that looking at this now, either z is equal to x, so I get a delta x minus z from that integral, okay, or z is equal to y, and I would get a delta y minus z, and then I'd put that fact. So if I put x has to equal z into here, I would get the delta. This delta would become delta y minus w. So there's my first term. And the other case was z is equal to y, and I get an x minus w left over, and then the delta. But both of those cases have this now a factor out of the side of them, and this is our problem. If I've got an extra factor in my argument, my delta function, it comes out as an absolute value down in the denominator. And so I've written in red the problems. And then there's this part is still left over, simplified. But again, it is tantalizingly close to the projector on the symmetric state condition. But not quite. So you kind of expect, I mean, at least my intuition is that something that gets that close.
On the second slide. There should still be a B there, right?
B?
In the last integral on that line is.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I left the B. That's the type. And so, literally, that's where that's the brick wall of it. And like I say, it comes so close that it looks like something must be. Something about it looks right. The notes. Things that you just notice by playing like this. We mentioned the first one is that for b greater than 0, from back before when I define the parameters, the variances, as soon as b is not 0, they're not minimum certainty. So just take note. Can we figure out why that seems important? So remember, the standard coherent states have v equals 0, and they do not give us two designs, I think. Conclusively, they do not give us two designs. So we have to kind of go to non-minimum uncertainty states to get two designs. That's the note I'm making. In the same vein, Heisenberg-Weil 1, remember in the finite case, you run the Heisenberg-Weil group over top of, on a fiducial state. In the finite case, you get a set of finite states that make MUVs are conjectured. Conjectured to be sick PLVNs. In this case, the Heisenberg-Weil group is not enough. Again, the Heisenberg-Weil gives you the standard coherent state, but you need more. I've called it T here, something symplectic, with parameters U and V to get you closer to the two design case. So that's another note. And this is just, you know, speculation. There's a conjecture that the fiducial states that you need in the finite case are eigenvectors of some Clifford group operator. So then I started thinking, well, what now? If I'm taking Heisenberg-Weil, the continuous Heisenberg-Weil, the Lie group, as the continuous analog of this generalized Pauli group or the finite Heisenberg-Weil, which I think most people do, then what's the continuous analog of the Clifford group, and can I take eigenvectors and talk about fiducial states? So maybe, you know, something like the Heisenberg-Weil group acting on fiducial states other than the vacuum might get you somewhere. But I mean, this is again all just speculation. Am I out of time, Ethan? I am. Okay. Thank you. I'll mention this is for Robin. I told you. This is because Robin doesn't read the email that I sent him 2 months ago. You see, a problem seems to be, you know, delta functions make me nervous. Rigged Hilbert space makes me nervous. I want to go to something, you know, some nice separable Hilbert space. So take the simple harmonic oscillator Hilbert space. And I sat around thinking when I got back from working with you, is how can I do that? How can I get rid of Dirac deltas and go to Kronecker deltas? And the point is, I did it, but you don't need to follow all this. It can be done analytically. I can get the overlaps that we need, but they're even more complicated functions of these Gaussian parameters, and Maple spits out integrals. I think the integrals can be done, but they're just enormous. Yeah, well, absolutely. Generating functions. I went to town. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. So I think I'm out of time. But that, yeah, it's a workshop talk. Here's a calculation that almost worked. If anyone can tell us what they think is going on, please do. Thanks very much. Yes.
I'm giving answers to some of your questions.
Excellent.
Not answer to the main one, though, unfortunately. So the continuous variable analog of the Clifford group are just kind of the Gaussian operations, so things that are linear in A and A dagger.
Linear in A.
Yeah.
Okay, so not simplistic.
I mean quadratic.
Quadratic. Okay.
Sorry, the Heisenberg vials linear.
Yes.
Quadratic in A and A dagger.
Okay.
Exactly those squeezings and skewings.
There. Yes.
Exactly. However, the continuous variable analog of stabilizer states is a little weirder. So in prime power dimension, stabilizer states form a two design. But for more interesting composite dimensions, stabilizer states have kind of different kinds of stabilizer states. Whereas in, say, prime dimension, they're all, or prime power dimension, they're all isomorphic, basically. The problem is you can have stabilizers. So let's maybe skip directly to the continuous variable case. So I had this paper with John Preskill, Alexei Kitaev, where we had kind of error correcting codes that were embedding a discrete variable and continuous variables. And the states we used were stabilizer states in some sense, but they were not Gaussian states. They were superpositions of a bunch of Gaussians.
Mm.
Actually, we had infinite spikes, so they're non-normalizable, but that, I don't know, maybe that can be fixed too. Anyway, the point here is that there may be some states that you're missing, that it's maybe not enough to do just three states. You want some of these superposition states,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the way to do this, I don't know if anybody's actually looked at this already, but in finite dimensions, composite dimensions, what set of states do you need to make a two design? Using the kind of the, say, dimension 6 or 6 to the n, something like that. Is there some analog of stabilizer states? What's the correct analog of stabilizer states in that dimension? That might tell you.
Right. Look for the analog as you go up.
In composite dimensions, there's basically multiple generalizations of the Paulis, right? Like for 4, there's the 2x2 Paulis,
yeah.
And there's also the discrete Weil
Heisenberg. So for 4, there's the 2x2 Paulis, which work very nicely, and I know how they work. And then there's the one. So I would say picking 6 so that you don't have that option.
So is it known that in general complex dimensions, there's a unique generalization of the Paulis? Because the Weil Heisenberg always...
Well, it depends what you consider unique. I mean, there's... Knoll has this stuff about nice error groups, nice error bases. And for large dimensions, there's lots of choices.
Mm-hmm.
For small ones, there may only be one.
So there's more, and so from the sick POVM results, I assume that there's more than just the finite Heisenberg Weil group as defined in the sick POVM literature gives you sick POVMs, right? I know it was mentioned in your paper. We'll use
the generalized poly group, but any, you know.
So we looked at multiple, in the dimensions where there are multiple nice unitary error bases, which I think you're sort of suggesting are generalizations of the polys in a particular sense. We tried those groups. In prime dimensions, for instance, the only nice unitary error bases are the Weil-Heisenberg group. But in other dimensions, there's multiple ones. And what we found, weirdly enough, was that some of them generated sick PLBMs and some of them didn't. And there was no rhyme or reason, and we went, ah.
And there's no reason to think that the set of ones that work all contract to the continuous, the same continuous Heisenberg phi, like in the limit.
Well, the question for the workshop, does anybody have any clue about the continuous infinity limit of any of these things?
I'm not sure they have that continuous limit. I mean, yeah. And that I don't know that there's other infinite families that have kind of a nice obvious correction. But I don't know very much about the weird nice error bases.
Yeah, and there is this, for one designs, you don't need an integrand, you don't need a continuous. Because you can have this example of Federomov that is in this group on coherent state. Uh-huh. So if you have a lattice in your phase space and you put a coherent state in each vertex, that's still a complete, it's an overcomplete set. So if the sum over all these states is the identity.
Yeah.
If you remove one state, it's no longer the identity. It's overcomplete by one.
Yeah.
So that is a one design. Maybe you can get.
Yeah.
So you don't need integral.
Well, I guess that would be the opposite of what Dan's saying, is that you could maybe you've got too much. Dan's saying maybe you're missing some. Maybe we've got too much is what you're saying. I was just talking to Andrew Scott before. Sorry? Yeah. Just talking to Andrew Scott before, he said, you know, the flavor of T designs is to approximate things with finite sets. So what you should be doing is looking for finite sets of Gaussian states that give you the same results as the integral over Gaussian state.
It could be a discrete set, maybe, not a.
Yeah.
That is
infinite. Lattice, yeah.
Question from an experimentalist.
Exactly. So I wonder, in order to project not on X and P eigenstates, but on these Gaussian states, what should I really do in experiment? I mean, I have a guess, but I'm not sure it's true. My guess is that you should.
I guarantee you that your guess is better than mine. I can guarantee it.
Well, I thought I should do homodyne measurement using not strong coherent light, but weak coherent light or even squeezed light. Is that true? What do you think?
Yes.
It is exactly what you do. It's homodyne with this slide, and then you move it as.
Oh, with weak coherent light. Mm-hmm.
But the question is essentially, I just continue on this question essentially. So, okay, I understand what one design means, so operationally. Which type of measurement, POV measurement, actually, it's kind of Carol Walker like measurement for simultaneous measurement of XMP. But what is the two design operational meaning? As a measurement to do, how would you perform in, or implement this sick POVM on an optical piece? From the description of the two design, I would guess that you have two correlated states, coherent states, on which you project.
Yeah.
So what is the operational implementation for your two design coherent space?
Yeah, so I admit I haven't thought about anything up edge you can see. I don't think operationally.
In the case of one design, it has an operational meaning, and that is well known for you. Now, the question of two design is probably.
But is it not just a. I'm talking myself into a hole. If you can do it for one. Standard coherent state, say. So this thing that doesn't work, but at least does this make operational sense? A tensor product of two standard coherent states in the same.
No, it doesn't make much sense to me. The one design, yes, but two design is totally different because essentially of these simultaneous, because they are simultaneously shifting here, two modes of electromagnetic field, if you wish, by the same amount, d alpha squared, essentially. One d is acting in one mode, other d is acting in the other one.
Right. Can I jump in here? Just because we're going in a weird direction. This is a purely mathematical, that the existence of two systems here is non-operational. This is just a mathematical test to prove that it's a two design. So there's really only one optical system that we're talking about. So one way to implement a two design measurement, an information link plate measurement, is pick a random direction, a random theta in 0 to 2 pi, and then measure the observable sine theta x plus cos theta p. That's a measurement, right? That's a POVM because you take an equal weighting of all angles, and that is an informationally complete measurement. It's not a sick POVM. It's a full set of MUGs. So the operational interpretation of what we're trying to build that we haven't yet proven is a two design, but we hope it is, would be you do a coherent state measurement, but first you apply a random squeezing and skewing, right? So you have an infinite set of different coherent state POVMs, and you're going to measure one of them, and they differ from each other by being differently squeezed and rotated. So some of them are regular coherent states, some of them are squeezed coherent state POVMs. That's the operational.
Perhaps I can say something. So when you have tensor products of the same state, the dual space of polynomial spaces, so you're looking at approximating functions like nonlinear. That's the point of design. So it's the motivation is to approximate functions which are more than polynomials or nonlinear functions.
Here's an extremely stupid question, I'm sure. If you've got, so one of the things you're trying to do is work out expansions for different patterns of states in phase space. So you've got the Gaussian types, and then you've got squeeze, which have a different angle and different stretching. So,
we're taking them all.
Sure. One way of expanding two-dimensional Gaussian structures and being able to represent and be in any two-dimensional pattern is to use two-dimensional higher-order Gaussian modes. So like Hermite Gauss modes or Laguerre Gauss modes. For example, if you took some state which was a shape certain squeezed in a certain direction, you could expand that as a superposition of various Hermite Gauss modes or a whole whichever family of higher order modes you took, whether it was Hermite or Laguerre Gauss or whatever, you could write that state, that picture, that function, as a superposition of higher order Gaussian modes. And I just wonder whether or not transforming into a basis like that might be of some assistance, or maybe.
When you say higher order Gauss modes, you mean translated first and second eigen and third eigenstates of the harmonic oscillator, basically?
I think so, yes. You can, like, a state which looks like it's a Gaussian, but it has a phase singularity down the middle in this direction, and so it has two lumps. Or it has, the other comparable one is the phase singularity in the other opposite direction. And the nice thing about those, for example, is if you add them in any superposition, then linear superposition, then you get phase singularities in some theta direction. I was just thinking that you could start to get pictures of something which is squeezed along a different angle. You could definitely expand that in higher order modes.
Maybe.
It would be hard to keep your restriction to certain operations. Right? This group language that you have in terms of only applying certain operations to your original Gaussian state, I don't see how you can translate that into. If you're rewriting your squeeze states as Hermite Gauss, as an expansion of Hermite Gauss polynomials, and you would have to find a way to figure out how to rewrite these operations that you want to do in that language.
Yes.
All right,
I'm glad that this talk generated so much discussion, but I think we should save the rest of it and thank Peter one more time.